Welcome back, everybody, to a brand new episode of the Inside Lacrosse Division 2, Division 3 podcast. I'm the host, kind of. I guess someone has to be host, and it's me, Kyle Devitt, and with me, as always, is Dan Kaplan. Dan, what's going on, man?
Woo!
That's good. Remembered. That's good.
I remembered.
You did remember. We have some fun games to recap for you guys. I want to plug off the top. Just off the top, I wrote a Fast Pass article for Inside Lacrosse about some of the best and most, maybe not best, but most exciting teams to watch in Division III. It's up on the website right now. Check it out towards the top of the page. It'll be fun. It's probably like underneath the Media All-Americans by the time you listen to this, but trust me, it's there. It's a lot of fun. You probably have to read a William Blake poem to get all of the references, but I think you'll enjoy it. And you know, a D2 team as a bonus, and that team is Wingate, who we're going to get to on this podcast. Let's start with game recaps, not necessarily in chronological order, but maybe in order, I would say, of importance. Off the top, Colorado College 12, CNU 11 in OT. Dan, take me to the moon, take me to the sun. This was a slugfest, and I loved it. Colorado couldn't quite put CNU away. CNU couldn't put Colorado away. This was a great D3 game. Weird turnovers, weirder man-ups. Obviously, you compare both of these teams, and you kind of see how they did against Salisbury. And for both teams, wasn't really close, but I think this game was telling in how even it was. And that will tell you where each team belongs in the national picture, which to me is both of them firmly entrenched in the top 20. My only question for you is Colorado College a top 10 team for you?
Top 10, I think, is a bit bold. I think the biggest thing hurting them is the loss to Colorado Mesa. As we look at resumes, there's almost across the board going to be a situation where we can look at losses and say, okay, there's one loss there that probably shouldn't have been had. And maybe you can chalk it up to, you know, a variety of things. But right now, I think that loss is definitely the, you know, ugly mark on the resume as you look at that.
Well, I think they're a D2 team. That's a D2 team.
Yeah, but I don't know. I guess it still impacts how you think of them as a team, right?
I mean, that's fair. Yeah, it's impossible to gauge. Like Lemoore Ryan has one of these too. Like, technically they lost to like Mercer, but like, really? You know what I mean? It's weird because like in the COVID times, you take what you can get for out of conference stuff. But yeah, no, I totally see your point in terms of like looking at them. I think the Salisbury loss is worse because it's by so much.
Yeah, I mean,
but
that's,
you know,
kind of the thing though. Salisbury suffocates you. If you can't manage to gain any possession on them, that's kind of what's going to happen. And they're just so much more athletic. I kind of think Colorado College and CNU are similar in the fact that they're much more skilled than they are, bigger and stronger and faster than teams
yes.
are.
And
so for that reason, I think that it kind of makes sense, the outcome with Salisbury, because you have to be able to compete with them athletically before you can compete with them on the lacrosse field. But I don't see Colorado College as a top 10 team for me. I do see them in the top 20, definitely, probably somewhere closer to 15 or so.
Okay.
But I don't think that they're quite going to eclipse that top 10 mark. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of put it out there. I think they're hovering around 10. Like, I'm not saying they're 5, you know?
Yeah.
Trust me, we'll get to which teams are 4, 5, and 6, because that's one of the hottest contentions that we had this week between Dan and I personally, which we will get to later. But I think what you're saying about Colorado College and CNU being – I call them kind of scheme teams, right, where the scheme and the skill is what makes the team good. Right. And I think we should probably just skip forward to talking about, because we're already talking about CNU. Let's go to Salisbury 25, CNU 12. I watched 3/4 of this. I wish I only watched 2. And
yeah.
It goes to your previous point. Bramo was on another level, just unguardable. Shot was dropping. It was like watching an NBA player get hot instead of a lacrosse player. He basically beat CNU by himself. The thing about playing a zone for CNU is if your goalie isn't making stops that he needs to make, it almost doesn't matter what the rest of the team does. When a goalie is facing a firing squad, of shooters like Melton, who had 8 points, Bromwell, 9 points, Cross Ferreira had 6 points. The goalie needs to be at the tippy top of their game to make the stops, and the defense needs to kind of support him with that backside, being able to rotate and slide into position to either block shots or kind of stop the easy ones. And it just didn't happen, man. This was a rough game to watch for CNU fans. And, you know, for Salisbury, it's another celebratory victory, right? You saw part of this. What did you think about it?
Yeah, definitely. You hit the nail on the head there, I think. And for me, CNU has, and I don't know how much stock we want to put into all of it, but we talk about all of these transfers and things like that coming in. But CNU has 3 Division I Poles transfer in, and Max Wayne and Phoenix Hines. So I don't know what they need to do to get a mesh point there, but I would love to see them start to get a little bit more continuity on that side of the ball and maybe sticking more man. Even though there were times where even when they did, like you said, like Bromwell was just on another level. In the very first play of the game, Phoenix Hines is playing great defense on him, stick in front. Bromwell just puts his shoulder into him, gets to like 14 yards, but he's dead center, and just shoots it harder than Hanway can track it, and it's in the back of the net. There's like almost nothing you can do about it besides just slide as soon as he gets the ball, but then you're sliding to poles with poles and you're leaving things exposed behind it. So it's hard, but I don't know what they need to do to get that continuity a little bit better, but it'll be interesting to watch, and I think they have the pieces, so that's why I'm so optimistic about it.
No, I think it's interesting. One of the things that you'll see at the D3 level and also D1 and pro to a certain extent is you will see guys that are shooters have games where they're totally dialed in, or they'll go on runs where they're totally dialed in. And I think the best example of this is like just in recent memory for people that have watched like high level lacrosse is probably Ryan Brown back in for the 2018 World Championships. He shot something like, I don't know, like 65%. And just like, dude, like didn't miss, was just like canning shots. And he hit shots from like all over the place.
Right. It's such a variety of shots.
Yeah. It's, but when you're dialed in and you know it's going down, you will like, it's heat check city.
Yeah. And Bromwell had that going. He had that going.
Yes. Yeah. He was incredible. So I think it's more down to that than CNU being not up to task with 2 losses in a row. Where does this kind of put CNU for you?
That's tough. It's hard for me to gauge because despite losing to them, I do think CNU is still the better team. I think if they play 10 times, CNU wins 8 of them, maybe 9. And so that's hard. I think this year of all years is hard for rankings, but it's going to be tough. I think I see them right on that bubble, kind of where you were saying you still think you see Colorado College. That bubble of like somewhere between 10 and 12, 9 and 11, somewhere around that range. But we'll just have to see how a couple more pieces play out before we release them on Thursday morning.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's going to be fun rankings for sure. All right, let's go to the next game. Denison 11, Owu 10. Revenge game for Denison, who lost last week to Owu, which we kind of talked about on the podcast. What did you think of this one?
So this one's interesting. They have – they, meaning Denison. Denison has a lot of young talent. Their leading scorers are a freshman and a sophomore. And I say a sophomore, but that's like under a year that they had maybe 6 games, 7 games. I'm not sure exactly what Denison had off the top of my head. But an abbreviated season, you know. So the experience level, it kind of makes sense that they could potentially drop a game to a team that they think that they're better than. And that they would feel is to some extent an inferior opponent. But I don't know. I think this is interesting. And Ohio Wesleyan had a little bit of an injection of talent with, I'm going to mispronounce his last name, but I think it's Whit Stroman, who's a Hofstra transfer. And so he came in and anchors that lefty attack spot for them and makes them a little bit more unpredictable.
Yeah. Tipped to us by Ohio specialist Patrick McEwen.
Yes. Yeah.
Let us in on that. I think with the Ohio teams, it's interesting. There's so many like good D3 schools in Ohio now. And I feel like they've always been there. and I feel bad for not paying attention to them until I started researching the OAC, the Ohio Athletic Conference, when I was writing up kind of John Carroll is one of those teams in the Fast Pass. And I was just looking at that whole conference, and I'm like, wow, Nat St. Laurent coaches Ohio Northern. Otterbein is pretty good. Otterbein? Bein?
Yeah.
Sorry. Bein. I wish I should. Otterbein?
Great. Sorry. I also have to abbreviate myself. It's with Stopak, not Stroman. I made Stroman up completely.
That's all right.
I knew it was ST and just went with it.
That's okay. Sometimes on the D2, D3 podcast, we just go with it. Yeah, no, I think that this kind of back and forth result, when you have to play a team back to back without a game in between and you have time to like kind of look at the film and adjust, you're going to see a lot of flip-flop results. And we're actually going to get to one later, but Dan, York 14, Stevens 9, this is your platform to tell everyone how great York is. Please do so.
Listen, I don't think they're great, okay, but I do think they're very complete. I think as we look through and talk about lots of different teams that we've gone through, you can kind of find and pinpoint one specific weakness, whether it's, you know, their close defense or they're not so great in the middle of the field or whatever it is. And I think that York is very complete in the fact that they have ways of accommodating for where they aren't great. And so that makes them really complete. I think they're good top to bottom. And that makes them really, really difficult to game plan for because they can beat you in a variety of ways. And so Stevens, in my opinion, I think they went into the game trying to take away Brendan O'Sullivan, who's kind of the off-ball key guy. And they did a great job of that. But you're going to have to find a much more, you know, complete game plan in order to stop York from getting on the board. You can't just take away one guy and expect to keep him off. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about them. They're really complete. You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
No. This goes back to earlier in the week, we were talking about our D3 rankings, and I might have been a little – I was picking a fight with Dan on purpose. I'll be honest. Sometimes I pick fights in the Slack. It's part of the fun of having access to it. And I was just like, tell me why York is the fourth best team, because I don't think they are. Tell me why they're better than Lynchburg. And I have not seen Dan angry per se. But now I have seen him type angrily. And it's a sight to behold. And I say that looking at Dan's face as we record this, and he has a mustache. So if that's more, you know, alarming than anything else, then that's where we're at. But listen, I'll admit it. He schooled me. He sold me. I'll put York at four. But I think we both agree York is a distant four to the top three, right?
Yeah, I think the way we see it, and I've been saying this, I feel like, for way too long now, but including last year, I think that there's the three at the top between Tufts, RIT, and Salisbury, and then there's a big gap. And then four through ten, I'll say four through seven are kind of a toss-up and can alternate. And then seven through ten are constantly interchanging, and you can make an argument for a variety of teams, and then so on and so forth for, you know, 10 through 20.
10 through 20 is a minefield. Just any team can win, any team can lose any week, and it's hard not to overreact when teams lose and when teams win. And in no better way is that illustrated than Gettysburg 9, Dickinson 7. I looked at this scoreline at the end of the third and freaked out because Dickinson was up 7-5. And I think I even slacked you that was happening. But I was pulled away by other games. Looked back at the final, and I was just honestly stunned to see Gettysburg storm all the way back with four unanswered goals in the fourth to win this. A game that, in my opinion, they absolutely have to win to stay in the conversation. What did you think?
I think if I'm Gettysburg, I'm walking away from this saying, like, win ugly. You're telling your guys, a win's a win. We won ugly. We got out of here. Let's go get better. But man, I think it was really, really, really ugly. And if you didn't catch this game, it had 24 turnovers and 16 penalties. And of those 16 penalties, only two of them were converted. So it's like, all right, if we're going to commit a whole bunch of fouls, at least let's get some man-up goals out of it. You know, everybody's got their hands free. You got plenty of time. Go in there with the play. Come up with something pretty, you know. Please the spectators here. And that didn't really happen so much. Then the other point that I'll make if I'm Gettysburg, I'm really happy with Kier Ward, who's a guy that hasn't had his name called so much in his career. I think coming into this, he only had 5 points in his career, and then he went for 5 points in this game. So that's really interesting. Great for him. Really cool. And another weapon that Gettysburg has that maybe was just kind of lurking in the shadows just off of that, you know, six guys or nine guys that play on offense. He was just kind of lurking as that 10th guy that's now getting his opportunity. You know, I don't know what it was, but that's awesome. Good for him. And Gettysburg gets a little bit more of a weapon that maybe we didn't know about.
Yeah, sometimes guys just make the jump. And, you know, it's technically our job to know which guys, but, you know, we can't watch every single person work out in the offseason and get coached up and kind of get their shot dialed in. But, you know, congratulations to him. Let's move on to kind of what we were talking about a little bit before with a back and forth result here. Washington and Lee, we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week because it happened after we recorded. Washington and Lee 12, Lynchburg 10 is the first thing. And the second thing is they played each other again. And it was Lynchburg 13, Washington and Lee 6. So we have an upset followed by a revenge game. What do these results mean? Because I constantly have people in the DMs being like, ODAC, respect ODAC, bring ODAC back. And I'm like, okay. Like, I don't really know what to say to that. The Washington Lee beating Lynchburg was definitely an eye-opener for me, though. What did you think?
Yeah, no, it's definitely an eye-opener. WNL jumped out on them. That was a 5-0 game, yeah. Like, a few minutes into the first quarter, which was shocking. But when you spot a team 5 goals, you're just working so uphill to get back. And they do get back. They end up tying at 6-6. And from there, it's a game. I think it goes into halftime 6-6. And then from there, it's, you know, one team's going to make enough plays to go on a run and one team isn't. And WNL made enough plays to go on that run. They go on a 3-goal run late in the game. And that kind of puts it in a spot where now Lynchburg is starting to panic, you know, and you're starting to rush and you're starting to play a little bit faster than maybe you're accustomed to. So, you know, it's not a good spot to be in when you're working against the clock and the score there. But then they turned the tides and beat them the following game. And I do think that Lynchburg is the better team. You know, I think they just spotted a team 5 goals, in like you were saying, in a good conference, you know, against a conference rival. You can't do that.
So we kind of talked about this when we were arguing about York on the Slack. Lynchburg has not really replaced the big game scorer that is Kevin Rogers now at High Point, right? And I think that's really what's keeping them from being in a conversation for the title, the in the national picture at this point. Not just this loss, but I think that loss definitely hurts, even though it's in conference and there's a rivalry there, which we should name this rivalry. Does this rivalry have a name? Just DM Kaplan and I.
Yeah, I don't know if it does. I should probably know that. I don't know.
We need more rivalries with names. And if no one's going to name them, it'll be us, and we'll do it. I don't have one in the moment, but give me a few days, and I'll have one ready by the weekend, and I'll tweet it out.
We'll start making names for games that aren't even rivalries.
Yeah, we'll make our own rivalries. We don't care. Yeah. We just want you to watch games. We like, thank you for listening here, but when you listen here and you don't listen to the game and you don't watch the games, there's a little disconnect there. We want you to watch the games. I think it's important to do that. So, Lynchburg has made, you know, some transition where, you know, I think earlier in the season they were like a better team. And now they're not regressing, but I think maybe people have seen enough tape on them to kind of get a jump on them or to be able to score on their defense or to isolate against them in a different way. What do you think about that?
I don't know, but whatever it is, I think WNL has it figured out. I went back and did a little bit of research on this, and going back to 2016, out of the last 8 times they've played, WNL has won 6 of them. And so whatever it is that they've got figured out on Lynchburg, I'm not exactly sure, but they got something down there. which is really interesting to me. I'm surprised when I went back and did that to see that it was as skewed as it was for the last few years. And I think before that, it was probably the other way, from 2015 to, I don't know, 11 or so. It was probably...
Yeah, probably the other way.
Heavily skewed the other way. But yeah, since then, they've had something figured out on them.
Jenny's up on Hornets, man. What are you going to do? All right, let's move on to D2. Not a ton of updates. Everything is mostly conference now. But speaking of which, shout out to New Hampshire's own St. Anselm's, a school I coached for crushing their sister school, St. Michael's, a school that I played for, 29-3 this past weekend. Historically, these teams are not that far away from each other in terms of like talent or skill or scoring. So that's a huge result. I think that's a statement win by St. A's, who, you know, they're ready. Any 10 is very gettable. I know that like all the coaches in the USILA poll and everyone else really is high on LeMoyne. I think it goes either Tampa or LRU one, and then whoever you have that is a number one, number two there, and then it's LeMoyne. I don't think LeMoyne is unbeatable at all. I think the thing about that school is they're always so organized. Sheehan does an incredible job getting that team ready for games. Every time they play against a conference opponent, that opponent knows it's going to be the toughest game that they have to prepare for, if not play in that season, in terms of the other team being ready for everything that they're going to do. So, you know, any 10, we're not heating up yet. We're not there. But there is an any 10 game that I do want to talk about in terms of going looking forward into the weekend. Pace LeMoyne in a rematch. Pace at home this time. They did lose to LeMoyne earlier this season, but Pace has a lot of good talent, good defense, decent like size to match up with LeMoyne. And I think this could be a huge test. And I think, you know, if Pace were to win this, they could get some national picture time after this game. So keep an eye on that. That happens this Saturday. The other game that will unfortunately be played by the time you listen to this, because of when we're recording, is LRU Wingate. This is it's not a loser leave town match. It's a winner gets the belt match for me in terms of team you need to watch. And I did write about Wingate. They are fun to watch. They have an awesome attack. But LRU, I feel, is just a juggernaut in terms of a top to bottom team, starting from the goalie all the way to the attack. So I think that's a game, you know, hopefully you watch this by the time you listen to it. And, you know, we'll hopefully be able to talk about it next week if it's as good as I believe it will be. I got LRU in it, but I think Wingate definitely has the capability to pull an upset, especially with their offense. Any thoughts before we move on, Dan?
Yeah, I have a future on Lenore Ryan to win the national championship. What do you think of that?
I think I want to get in on it.
Oh, breaking news.
Yeah, let me get in on that.
Okay.
I don't know how – I don't even know – I don't know how to gamble, so I don't know what that means. But I'm in on it. Let's do it. Even if it's not real, we should do it. All right, let's go into the D3 weekend preview. Insert intro music here. We don't have any, but it'd be cool if we did. All right, D3 weekend preview. Gettysburg or Sinus? What? Biggest game of the weekend in terms of conference play and the big picture of the entire season for both of these teams that have barely played. Dan, what do you think about this one?
I'm just excited to see them. I'm excited to see these teams square off, you know? But I think it's going to be a really good matchup. I think both teams have some serious contention towards each other, which is really, you know, like makes me as a fan want to tune in even more. But recently with your Sinuses, like, surge to being towards the top of the Centennial Conference in the last couple of years, I think F&M and Gettysburg are like, what the heck is going on here? And are not expecting it. And I think that it's become a big deal, which is really, really exciting for me.
I would really like to wake up the Gettysburg and Ursinus Hive, because the only team in the Centennial that is just constantly on me is F&M.
Yeah.
Just F&M Hive is out there. Like, do not slander them at all. It will not go well for you. I'm just letting you guys know. And I haven't this season. You'll notice. But they do have to get a victory of note to get a mention on the podcast. So hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. Ooh, damn, we got NESCAC openers.
We do.
Is this right? We got NESCAC openers.
Woo. We got our pick. Pick opening up.
Williams versus Trinity. And listen, we've heard some things. Will Trinity's numbers be enough to overtake a Williams squad that has taken up a spot in the top 20 after, you know, some attrition there? And how many EIFs are out against Trinity? That's what I want to know. Because I think that'll help decide the game. By all accounts, Trinity has a full squad and was like COVID lockdown ready to rock against anything. So don't be surprised if this result is enough to move Williams out and someone else in, right?
I'm going to live action break your heart.
Okay.
What do you think I'm about to say?
It's canceled?
It has been postponed. That's correct.
Is that true for the next game that we're going to talk about as well?
The Williams-Trinity game has been postponed, and Williams will now play Conn College on April 10th at 3 p.m.
So maybe we got that information reversed. That's what that sounds like.
Yes.
To me. Breaking news on the pod. Hamilton Wesleyan, is that happening?
Let's pull it up. Let's figure it out.
Dan literally has a live feed up of people just telling him when games are. Like, he's jacked into the Matrix at all times. I've said that before. I'll say it again. How we looking?
We're good.
Okay. Hamilton versus Wesleyan. Wesleyan still has Ronan Jacoby and 12 seniors. They don't really have any sophomores or juniors. But is that enough to roll against a team like Hamilton that they have beaten fairly easily in the past?
Yes, but I did. I made that comment, and nobody was quicker to remind me of an instance in which they did not roll on Hamilton, and that was the year they won the national championship.
Ooh.
They almost had a hiccup, and they ended up beating Hamilton either 10-8 or 9-8 or something, or it was like a really weird game.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yes, and that was Coach Rabo's son himself who was very quick to remind me, don't sleep on that. So I don't think that they're necessarily overlooking Hamilton. They still remember 2017. It wasn't that long ago.
No, and I will tell you guys that my statement last week on the podcast that if Wesleyan won the NESCAC, I would get a Wesleyan Reba tattoo. That tattoo was designed for me and sent to me in a text message. So I'm sticking with – I mean, I'm not going to root against Wesleyan to win this game.
I have every reason to root for them of all time now. Like, I have nothing against it.
That's because Dan is very smart about not making proclamations on national
podcasts. I didn't say anything about getting a tattoo. That was you.
Yeah, I know. I was praising you for not being as reckless and thoughtless as I am. But a promise is a promise. So we'll see what happens. And I didn't say where I'd get it. So that's going to help me out.
Or how big, I guess. I should have locked you in to terms.
I mean, you saw the design. It's definitely not small. So yeah. We'll have to figure that out. Let's talk a little bit more about what we were talking about last week in terms of teams being eligible for the Division III NCAA tournament. The original amount of games that you needed to play was 7. And now it is 5, and that includes conference playoffs if teams agree to do playoffs or just go by standings. Is that correct?
Yes, that's my understanding, yes.
So that's why I kind of panicked when I saw more NUMAC games getting canceled, because there aren't that many teams in the NUMAC. They've only got a couple games to play, and Clark's had 2 games canceled now. So if they don't schedule that as a makeup, which I have been told they are not going to do, then – they're not going to be eligible at all, and the conference might not be eligible either. So I think that's why I kind of, you know, sounded the alarm last week that this is a possibility. But the other conference that this is a possibility in is the NESCAC. If the NESCAC misses one of the – that's why it's great that they rescheduled Williams to play on.
Yes.
Because if they didn't do that, one game – these teams miss one game in either pod, right, because it's a 2 – kind of conference plays each other, and then the winner of each one of those is plays in the, for the championship game, anyone misses one game, they're not going to be eligible for the NCAA championships. So that's, you need to keep an eye on that if you're a fan of Division III lacrosse of any conference, because I guarantee you there's a bunch of people that are rooting for NESCAC teams not to be eligible, which is only because they're fanatics and not fans of the game.
And fortunately, Trinity's in the spot where they were actually able to play some out-of-conference games. So they played Castleton and they played Endicott before they ended up on this break. And they had a couple games canceled that are listed as canceled, but the Conn College and the Williams games that were on their schedule are both still listed as postponed, which gives me hope that, you know, they are still in the process of potentially getting those. But even if they don't, if those two games stay as postponed or ultimately end up being canceled, Trinity still has the number of games that remaining on their schedule, plus the games that they've already played. That would give them five games without any of the conference play.
Right. So some teams have been able to kind of not skirt that, but been able to make it up in case there's a contingency. I believe Bates and Conn played as well out of conference games before this weekend. So, you know, NESCAC teams are doing their best to get their games in and avoid not being eligible. Speaking of not eligible, the war at the shore is the war no more. WAC Salisbury canceled. Thoughts?
It's potentially a saving grace for WAC. I don't know that it was going to go so well. But yeah. Obviously, it stinks anytime we have games canceled. I think more so that this isn't a COVID issue. I think it's more of a out-of-conference issue. Whereas WAC is in the Centennial, and I'm not sure that they're letting teams play out of conference despite historic rivalries.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't going to go well. I do have people in DMs once again asking about the Washington College job. We don't have any information on it yet. But, you know, like we said, when Kinnear was still with us, he's still alive. He's just not on the pod. Rick Soll is easily the guy that makes the most sense, but none of us know if WAC is willing to commit to that and, you know, how much that's going to impact the process of it. I think it would be huge for the entire division to get Rick Soll back in as a coach personally, and to kind of help rebuild that program to, you know, a perennial power, which they were when he was playing there, right?
Yeah, we got to get him that Richie Mead Furman contract.
Yeah, for sure. Sons of Furman. All right. We had another segment, but I think we're going to cut it. And we're just going to go to the D2, D3 play of the week. It is Colorado College's game winner from Elliott Nelson against CNU. In terms of sheer artistry, not high marks. But OT winners don't have to be pretty to get the dub. Hats off to him for getting it to drop on, of course, a backside swing to the back pipe. And he just kind of dumped it five hole. I loved it. I didn't love not knowing who it was because the CNU announcers were so bummed that they lost. They didn't say who it was. And I'm like tweeting. I'm like, who is? Oh, you didn't. I can't. There's no replay?
They do a great job, though. They were definitely disappointed.
No. I couldn't hide that.
Nobody could hide that.
No. They were very disappointed, and I like had no idea who scored it. And I'm like, did I miss that? And I'm like, no, they didn't say it. And it's just Colorado College wins. And it's like, oh. And then I looked down and looked up, and the feed was gone. It was just a blue screen.
Cut it. Get it off. They lost. Get it off.
We can't do it live. So, yeah, Hames with a great skip to Nelson, as you said, here in the
Yes, game. Yeah, awesome skip. I love that. It was just such, like, a in-motion redirect that all of the flow of the defense inside was all going the opposite direction. And then when he hit him with that skip back to the pipe, as you said, it was money.
Just one of those plays where the pass is better than the goal, which
yes. –
Listen, it happens sometimes. Sometimes the pass should get some of the shine, and definitely given there, we'll try and isolate that and put that in the post for this.
Yeah, it's already in the roundup, so if you just absolutely can't wait by the time you hear this to go and see the clip, you can always go check out the roundup.
Go read Dan Kaplan's roundup every week.
Yeah, do that. Do that. Just do it. Do it.
Yeah. We're allowed to plug our own stuff.
Start speaking Dutch.
Gave us a podcast.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Click on that. Do it. All right. I got a note here to say goodbye and remind everyone how good York is, because I lost that argument so profoundly. So you can follow me at TheKyleDevitt. Don't DM me. Dan, where can people find you on the interwebs?
At DKaplan46. And you can always DM us at Kyle Devitt.
Yeah, do Kyle Devitt, not the Kyle Devitt. That's right. Yeah, do that one. I don't know who runs that one, but it's not me. All right, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.